Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, and Dr. Paul Hall in Raising Expectations.
We're sure glad you tuned in tonight, and we're thankful that you're listening to Raising Expectations. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and we count it a blessing that you take the time to tune in. We've got a great team that does an incredible job for you. I want you to know each member of our co-host staff. We've got Dr. Paul Hall. We have Commander Rob Hansen and his wife, Nancy Hansen. We've got Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. And we have Andrea Kelly right here to my left and your right. So tonight we're going to have an incredible program. And as we begin tonight, because they've been kind of giving me a bad time, I forget about this part. We would like to run it by you. If you are blessed, encouraged, we hope, strengthened, and enjoy the time with us, we would invite you to go to that little purple button that says donation on it and realize that it cost us to bring Raising Expectations to you. All I want to say is if you're blessed, whatever you could do to give to this program keeps us on the air, keeps BBS Radio going, keeps us on the program, and hopefully will allow us to bring great things, which I'll tell you about right at the end of the program. But tonight, I want all of our program guys to say hi to you. Our team is your family, and we claim you as our family. Everybody say hello.
Hey.
Hello.
That was only two of us. There we go. Hey. There's a whole team. Okay. So tonight we want to introduce to you two people that you already know that are co-hosts of ours, but like the rest of our team, they're very, very special people. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. Craig is a general surgeon. Craig is a trauma director. He does trauma vascular surgery at his hospital. Everybody looks up to him at a very difficult time. He also is in a key leadership role for his local church. He's got a heart that cares for people in all ways. And Stephanie is a certified health coach who knows everything about making us really, really healthy. So in tonight's program, they're going to be sharing with us. All the folks on our team are going to be sharing great questions, and we hope that they will encourage you in a wonderful way. So on behalf of all the team, Stephanie and Craig, we want to turn the program over to you, and we'll be in touch with you. Everybody just jump in. Rob, Nancy, Paul, all of us that are here, Andrea and I, we'll all be anxious to hear what you have to say and to share also. Take it away.
Thank you. Thanks for letting us lead a little bit tonight. We appreciate it. Health can be a lot of different things, and a lot of people think it's exercise and it's food, and it can be, but I think we have some more pressing issues as a nation right now, with many people having stay-home orders and controls kind of being ratcheted back down, and people are reeling. So the first part is on just mental health, and then the second part we wanted to talk about is schooling at home and how that may look for a lot of people that are not willing to send their kids back in full masks or can't do virtual. So I thought we should talk a little bit about mental health and just the stress that is really real for people right now. I think our society doesn't want to talk about that. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge it and that it's okay to be sad. It's okay to be depressed or possibly anxious, and that obviously leading into good mentorship, leaning into the Lord, there's a lot of things that we can do to help ourselves, but that it's okay to feel that way right now.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Absolutely. Okay, everybody agrees. That no commentary?
Yeah. And I think it's normal the way things are.
Yes. Yeah.
What I've seen is an increase in depression in patients, increase in suicides, increase in pregnancies, and divorce. And then I predicted there'd be an increase in domestic violence, since I'm a trauma guy, but that didn't happen. What did happen was rioting, which is an outbreak because of COVID. It's the being kept in and unable to gather with people that we're built to do, that creates anger and anxiety and fear, and that's all lashed out in rioting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think we just need to start with that. Go ahead, Andrea.
No, go ahead, Stephanie. I can.
I just think that okay. It's just so thinking. Important to acknowledge. Sorry, Andrea.
We're both from the same cloth. We're very polite. Okay. I'm going to talk now. No, I have a question for you. You know how couples, they go off to work and then they maybe take the children and do things and then they're together a little bit at night and then on the weekends. Now I'm seeing people that don't work together all the time, all the time. I wonder to myself, how is that changing dynamics? I'm having a wonderful time. For me, it's fun, but I don't think everybody measures by that same, you know, stick. So how's it going out there for couples that are together all day long?
So Pastor Joe, you lucked out. She likes being around you. You're doing all right. I think it's really hard for some people, especially if you're used to having your own space. It's one of the things that I talk to a lot of folks that are considering homeschooling or even the sort of forced homeschool that they're in. We all need our own space. And if you don't feel like you have a little corner that you can escape to or get a little reprieve, you're probably not going to be good for your family. And so I think that's really important. And also to look at things in 5-minute increments. Can you go outside for 5 minutes? Can you take a break from your children from 5 minutes? You know, you may not get the hour chunk you want.
I think what I've noticed is just in our own street, we see families or individuals just walking or running or riding bikes just to get out and exercise. And I think getting that blood flowing definitely helps.
A lot more. People are out a lot more. I don't know if you guys noticed that in your neighborhoods.
No,
we
actually.
Have 300 surrounding.
Oh, go ahead.
We have 900, and we have an 8.5 that we walk on. And that is, I think, what gives us a lot of space. And we also have our own office spaces. So you're right. Even within the home, you do take your individual solitude. And I do walk around the ranch, and I do walk out amongst the river and the rocks. So, yeah, you're right. Even though you're together, there's break time. So well said.
Rob, did you have a question there, a statement?
I've, again, being from the old school, I know that, and I'm thinking about all of those millions of people that have lost their jobs. In the old days, and maybe up until, well, maybe now, men used to define themselves by their work. And we used to think about our worth as, you know, the provider and the person that made the money and was able to provide, you know, food, clothing, shelter for the family. And now, again, in the last 4 or 5 months, all of that's really changed with the COVID and the diktats that come out that say, you can't go to work, you can't do what you normally do. And I think, again, that sort of leads into the mental health issue, the sense of self-worth, and the tragedies that are going on with a lot of the millions of businesses throughout the country, where these businesses are probably never going to come back. And I can't imagine what that must be like for, well, the man of the family, again, from the old school, which I am, and also for the family itself, where there's nothing people can do about it. And I think, again, that contributes to a lot of what I think you're going to be talking about, Stephanie.
Yeah, we had good friends that we got to talk with recently. He's a musician, a guitarist, writes songs, plays at weddings. We met him in Vegas at a leadership conference, and he was playing at a blues restaurant, and just a personable guy. And his prediction is that livelihood is gone, because maybe wedding venues and small groups, but being in a big restaurant and or auditorium where you're performing or stadium is not going to happen again.
And this is someone who's been in that business for 30 years, and he's very wise, and he's realized that he needs to switch directions. And so I think folks that have the wherewithal or the passion to shift what they're doing are going to be able to be successful. But I think it's very defeating for a lot of people to, you know, spend your life doing a certain career, and then it's just taken by no fault of your own or your company's or whatever. And I think it is a really good reminder that we need to stay close to our family. I think I may be overreaching, but I think there's a little bit of a cleaning process that's going on with humans. We've been a little bit out of control, and I think the Lord is telling us maybe we should be at home a little more. Maybe we should nurture the relationships that are really important. Maybe we don't need to be so fast all the time and busy to go, and that there's a lot to be said from that. And if we had a little bit more of the older community, then maybe when you lost your job, your neighbors or your family might come to rally around you. So I think there's a lot of good waiting behind this if we're prepared to respond.
Yeah, and remember in the old days where you had families with, the grandparents living with the family, and they were part of the family, and they lived with the family, and they watched the grandkids while mom and dad went out on a date. What a concept. And that obviously no longer exists because mind if we dates. But we also, have found in the last, 30 odd years that a lot of parents are more than happy to just sort of throw their own parents into nursing homes and everything and just sort of put them away without thinking much about how important they were to the family way back when. And again, that's I think a mental health issue too, that may be worth talking about.
But then again, okay, if you have two the children that were, they can't take care of parents, especially with that Alzheimer's and stuff like that. So it's not that they want to do it; it's just that they have to do it sometimes, just so they can still make a living for themselves.
Yeah, but at what cost?
Nancy, you kind of cued me in regards to, I've had three texts come to me frantically to, in all due respect, Rob, to let you know that I think women must be at least 50% of the population that supports their families these days. There's so many single women and that are parenting and getting minimum child support, that I think those stats have shifted. So in all due respect to all the working class out there and all the people that are laid off, both men and women and young people starting new jobs, a new society will emerge. Probably more of it will be done from home that we thought we couldn't. God certainly blessed me in that I had already started an online business and have been very blessed to have that already going. So in all due respect, I think the working class people need a lot of ideas and creative ideas of what can they do at home with their children. I remember we used to build tents and have overnight stays in our living room. I mean, there's so many creative things you can do right at home. We had flashlights instead of candles, and we were in our living room in a small, small house. So there's fun, old-fashioned, creative things that we can do. Imagination. Imagine this, right?
So actually, go ahead, Pastor Paul.
This is Paul. Just a couple of observations, then I have a question for you. One is, I noticed in Lombok, where I live, there seems to be in the tent a lot of floating anxiety. People don't really know why they're kind of on edge, but they are. You almost have to go overboard to be nice to draw, to let them know it's okay for them to be a little bit, be a little joyful, you know, and the only thing, of course, is to do behind a mask, but other than that. But I notice free-floating anxiety now. That's an observation, which leads to question. When I was pastoring, one of the leader principles that that I always kept in my mind is that organizations have forms. Families have forms, boundaries around them. And oftentimes, inside those forms, it freezes, kind of like concrete sets up. Okay, and I think as this COVID has come along, it's really kind of exploded some of those forms. Okay, and the dynamic that goes along with that is that you really need to be out in front of it as much as possible to make new forms, because it's going to free again, you know, how it's set up. So my question to you is, in this time of incredible change, you know, as family units, as working together as much as possibly can, what are some of the healthy things that we can do to set the forms so that when this freezes again, and it will, what will that look like? You know, do you have any recommendations, anything that you're seeing? If that quite makes sense at all.
Yeah, no, it completely makes sense. So anxiety is the number one thing I see with clients that I coach. And there's a variety of reasons that they feel that way. But I think, especially with this lockdown time, just as children need structure, we need structure. Our society has artificially given us a structure. You have to get up and go to work and blah, blah, blah. Well, now a lot of that has changed. And so I think it's really important to have a morning routine, whatever that looks like. I personally go to the bathroom, I get some coffee, I sit down, I get in the Word, I read my Bible, do a little prayer time. I actually do some yoga stretching and mindfulness. Some people call it meditation. I visualize my day. I will even listen to recordings. There's a fabulous guy, Og Mandino, and you can listen to his recordings. And he's like, I will start this day with love in my heart. You know, I know them now because I listened to them so much, but we have to make a conscious effort to set our day in a certain way. Otherwise you roll out of bed. First thing you do is look at your phone, turn on the news, and all of a sudden you're reeling down this negative path, right? So we have to be very protective of what we let our day do to us. Does that make sense?
Sure.
Yes.
This is the week that I'm usually on what we call the Death March. It's a backpack trip with a group of guys. Normally we gather in Fresno, fly over to Lone Pine or Mammoth or Bishop with our 70-pound pack, and we get bussed out to a trailhead and we go 6,000 feet up, and then we're off trail crossing the Sierras the rest of the week. This is the first time in 31 years we couldn't go.
Oh, wow. And so,
answering your question, Paul, what we did Saturday night, which would have been our first night, we have a tradition. We get into camp, we set up, and then we have salt, lime, and tequila before we jump into the freezing cold lake. And someone yells shots. And so we got on a Zoom. It's not quite the same, but, and most of us could make the Zoom. A couple of them were absent, but we got to have that tequila shot via Zoom. So no jumping in the pool's naked.
There's a reason it's called the Death March. Right. Only men go on this. So it's stupid.
You know, we need to be social. And the only way we can really do it is like this.
We have to have their guy thing. There's nothing wrong with that.
They love it. I'm like, please come back alive. 1 year, this could be a whole episode. 1 year he called me. He's like, I just sliced the end of my toe and it's fine. The other doctors just cut it off.
My first year, I had no idea what I was in for, and I was in good cardio shape.
We're corralling dogs right now, so.
And my shoes were too tight, so I was losing toenails on the way. Ah. So when I mailed the leader, Eric, the check for the trip, I included 3 toenails in an envelope.
Yeah. Girl,
we never do that.
I hear if there's going to be a new norm, if there's going to be a new norm, then those of us of faith, you know, and we share that faith, What do you think that maybe some positive thing we can do to help this new norm, whatever that may be, be more productive in terms of our relationships? Is that a question? You know, I believe we're made for relationships, and it takes a lot of work and a deep commitment to maintain that and to better them. So maybe can you share with us some things we can do to strengthen our relationship with each other? You know, that might be a good thought.
So the first part you started asking was a little different, and I want to answer that first. It was kind of like, what can you do maybe to not be anxious or stuck on yourself? So my favorite answer for this, and it sounds so simple, but I dare you to do it. I double dog dare you. Get your phone out and call 5 people or text 5 people and just tell them how much you love them, how wonderful they are. What I was thinking about you today, no agenda at all, just a little love to someone, and you have no idea how far that will go. The other thing is pray for other people. You know, it's a similar concept, right? You have all these things you're worried about. The Lord knows your issues. He knows your prayers. He has them. I promise He has them. How can you pray for somebody else? And all of a sudden that changes everything. And I even suggest serving someone else. Now we're all in lockdown. Maybe it's leaving a little frozen meal for an elderly person or a note for your neighbor. You may not be able to go out in a formal setting, but it's the same way. Little tiny acts go so far and they will fill you up. I promise you will feel so much better.
I agree. And I look at it as a form of protest against self-centeredness. I like to call it other-centeredness. When you're focusing on others rather than yourself, that's a tough thing culturally these days because, you know, obviously millions of people are focusing more on themselves than they are about others and their welfare and their problems. And that's a tough nut to crack because there's just so much self-centeredness out there.
Yeah. And I think it's the same, Pastor Paul, for relationships. I mean, Craig and I joke, we never make 4th of July. We don't make that a big deal. We don't make Valentine's Day a big deal. We love our anniversaries and celebrate that. But my joke is I have a great husband all throughout the year. I'm not worried about Valentine's. So it's really simple. I mean, I'll go to the coffee machine and there's a little note that says, I heart you, you know, and then I'll write one back or you stick one, like, it's not hard. Bring someone a coffee or you in relationships, whether it's romantic or with family or children, you make a choice to love that person. You can't control what they do, but that simple act repetitively every day, it's contagious. And so even if that person's super crabby, I was crabby yesterday. I was having a hard time at home. It's the truth, right? We're normal. He came up, he's like, are you okay? You know, just sat down and looked me in the eyes. It's amazing how far, rather than saying, well, there you go, being emotional, he didn't do that. He could have, and he would have been right, and then I would have gotten mad, right?
Well, yeah.
And even more worse.
I hope so.
Well, it was also good because the boys were watching really closely, so it's a teaching moment.
Your children watch, yeah. For sure. Good or bad, right?
Mm-hmm. What really makes you feel strange is when you get, where you got like 9 grandkids and you got 3 kids and your oldest daughter who was, you know, your first child, you put so much work into. By the time you get to the last one, the prototype took all the beating. The other ones are fine. They just coast. But anyway, I even had to say to my oldest daughter, speaking of the boys like you did, Craig, she was doing something coming along and I said, you know, Amy Jo, I just don't believe you. I said, here you are. Actually, you're counseling your dad. I said, I am so blessed by what you have to say. Boy, you must have had a good mentor. And of course, she laughs, but it comes all the way back around. It really does. It's a blessing the way God gives his kids that way.
I know about that. I'm number 6 out of 6 kids. So I'm the last one. So it's like they kind of gave up on me at that point.
They knew you'd be fine.
All the hand-me-downs.
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, we're all still alive. We're all okay. So We manage. Poor parents, my poor parents, though.
This is also one of the things that I wanted to mention about this sort of time period and what you were asking about relationships, Pastor Paul, because there are a lot of people in this forced school at home, whether it's virtual that your school is offering, or you're saying that's for the birds and I'm going to homeschool, which, by the way, is legal in 50 states with varying rules and limitations. And if you want to do that, I highly recommend hslda.org. It's Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and they will give you guidance, protection, what you need to do for your state. But a lot of parents, and really kind of speaking to what you were saying, Andrea, on single mothers, I think they're probably impacted the most right now. So those that are working maybe are working 2-3 jobs, and now they have all these kids at home that they're trying to support. And I love to remind all parents, you wanted your children probably more than anything. You know how exciting it is to have them. And then societally, we get to this point where we send them off to school because that's what we do. And so we all get used to it. And I used to see these social media posts from friends that I love, but they would say, thank goodness, first day of school, I'm so glad my kid is off at school because I can't take it anymore. And those messages would break my heart because you have these beautiful, precious children, and I know you love them. But on the other side, we have such busyness with all the work and the expectations that we have to do and getting them to 800 sports and blah, 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 blah. And I think that this is a call back to quiet and just to remind yourself, you love your kids. You have the opportunity to get to know them really well right now. I was a very reluctant homeschooler. I did not want to do it. It was actually a private school our children were at. It was not serving one of our children. And it was probably our biggest marital disagreement. It's the best thing we've ever done as a family. And we're starting our 7th year. You know, parents, you teach your child the English language, which is the hardest language. So I hear people tell me, I only have a high school degree. How could I ever teach my kid? No one will ever teach your child better than you will. No one, I promise. So I just think it's really important to know that there's a way, and you don't have to do it alone either.
I'm reminded of a news article I read earlier today about, you know, all the riots in Portland, Oregon. There were 20 people arrested either yesterday or over the weekend in Portland, and 13 of the 20 were school teachers. And these were rioters. And so, yeah, they got arrested. And these are the people, obviously public school teachers, being involved in a lot of this rioting. And it does call into question the type of public school teachers that are out there and the concerns I would have, you know, if my kids were 30 years younger than they are now, putting them in a public school, because I don't think things are being taught in our public school system that needs to be taught. And that really concerns me. In fact, I remember a few weeks back, there was, I think, a middle school teacher in New York City who was one of the people responsible for defacing the Christopher Columbus statue in New York City, another school teacher. And I'm very concerned about that, because I don't necessarily think that these are the kind of people we want our kids to be taught by.
Yeah, wait till they go to a liberal college.
Yeah, true.
What'd you say, Pastor Joe?
I'm sorry, Craig, I think I rode over you. Would you repeat that, Craig? I didn't want
to. Oh, I said wait till your kids go to a liberal college.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I mean, even Cal Poly St. Louis
has a lot of.
Which, of course, raises the question whether or not they should even go to a university.
Most colleges are liberal.
Unless they're, you know, going to go into pre-med, pre-law, engineering, or any other professional thing I can't think of right now. There are studies being done now that a lot of people are better off just going into a trade, and they end up making a lot of money, and they're not in
100%.
The debt, and students are in after, you know, spending 4 years studying, I don't know, gender studies or something, that will get them a job, I guess, at Starbucks as a barista, but not a whole lot more.
Right.
Yeah. We're our third generation, I believe, of revisionist history. I have a friend, I believe the question was put, who's Franklin Delano Roosevelt? And teaching the eighth grade, the teacher didn't know.
If you don't know who FDR is, no.
So if you don't know who these men are, you don't mind pulling down statues. But most important of all, the ethics, the values, the systems, the beliefs we built America on, they will not know those. But you're talking to your children at home. They not only get a great education that way, they also get your heart. You know, I'm going to say this, I want to be quiet. But as a former Christian high school principal and school teacher, I'll tell you what, Robbie, you hit that one. You know, you have to deal with like seven major things: your schedule, your staffing, your physical plant, your academic structure for the year. You've got to cover your three critical things that they don't get at all. And I believe that's your spiritual formation, your social emotional formation, and your health and support services. You know, we started passing out condoms and everything else way back when we were in high school. All of those things, that's not at all what God told us to teach our children and our family. And the teachers that I had when I was in the public school, they weren't like that. I'm getting old, you know. I took those trips around Mount Sinai with Moses. But in any event, those things are not being taken care of. So there's another really strong point to teach your children, love your children. When they get ready to go, they're going to fly. They need to be authentic and make a difference in the world, not blend into it.
I also wanted to comment on something that Stephanie said that was absolutely accurate, Stephanie. You know, I do family bonding for a living. And one of the biggest things is single moms that are home with their children all day and or have to work. So they're working out of their home and their children are there. And what they need is time out. Like you said, they need time out. So they might have a neighbor or a friend. Most of their mothers don't live in California. It got too expensive on taxes. They all had to move. I'm the last person left in California out of five generations. So basically speaking, parents need a break. And so get a best friend or hire a sitter for, if it's even an hour, to go for a walk and get out of that situation. And then you come back home refreshed. And another thing is imagination and play. When you play with your children, imagination ignites intellect. So you need imagination to take it to the next level. Children can go 52% beyond what they're taught at home and by their teachers if you ignite imagination, and that's done through play. So what an incredible time to go back to old-fashioned imagine this and play.
Yes, amen.
So I wanted to say a little bit about the teachers, and obviously it's different in every state. I think there's still 39 states that do Common Core, and I'm not sure how much everybody knows about that. Our 22-year-old was the last one to graduate high school without having to do Common Core. Then the SAT fell in with Common Core and all of that. It teaches one learning style. There are 16 learning styles. The public school education is supposed to be there to give every child a good quality education. That does not fit all children. So I have a lot of opinions on school reform, but with that said, I have quite a few teacher friends. Most teachers go into it because they love kids and they want to teach them curriculum. What they end up doing is lesson planning, classroom management, and a lot of them are petrified to go back to class. They don't know how they're supposed to manage 30 kids, 10 IEPs, masks, not leaving the classroom for lunch or break. So they're all stuck in there. It's a nightmare. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all the different scenarios really have it against them. And even principals, our schools were not set up to do this. So my heart does go out to them that it's not ideal. But one of the things that I've been encouraging people that have reached out to me about schooling at home, as long as it's within your state's regulations, I think it's really important to have a couple families that you can get together with. Sort of like what you're saying, Andrea, maybe you have the kids for an hour or two, then you have them. Oh, you're great at science. I'll send them over. Oh, you love to play. I'll send them over to play. One, it's good for our children, and two, it's good for us. We are not meant to do life alone. Like you said, Pastor Paul, about relationship. We need that relationship. And so we can still find that. I think we just need to be purposeful and do it in small segments. And one of the really weird things about our family that I wanted to share, Andrea, is our linen closet. We have a double linen closet, and it's not full of linens at all. It's full of games. We have games for every every subject, every imaginative. Oh, here's a new one. Every strategy. And they love playing games. The other thing we do, which is really weird, because I have a dyslexic child, and this was one of the best pieces of advice we got, was to read out loud to them all the time. And we did it when they were young, but we started stopping. Yeah. We still now do it, and our youngest are 12 and 14. And it has been amazing family time. We get to pick good quality things, and they love it. They're usually imagining. They're setting up dominoes to set down, or Legos, or drawing, or working a puzzle. So we have this family time at night that has become this beautiful ritual that they love.
I love it. That's wonderful. Yeah. Talk about family bonding, getting to know your brother and sister, and who's a good sport and who isn't, who needs to work on what.
I have a question too. You know, homeschooling is good, but what about the socializing? What about the sports that these kids are going to miss out on? What is that? How is that going to affect their psyche? You know, last year they didn't go to their prom. They weren't able to graduate. And now this is like starting all over again. How does that work?
Well, you're me. So I grew up in a public school all the way through, 14 years after high school, and 12 years with kindergarten, so 13 before that. So, and I did okay. But
you did okay.
One, it's not the same as it was. The kids are having sex in the bathrooms and on the basketball court at the dances and proms. So that wasn't really happening when I was of age. The education's different. You know, the classroom sizes are larger. And as Steph would point out, the only one school of 50 in U.S. News top high schools was mine. It's the only public school there. All the other ones are private. So I had a very providential and lived on Providence Court, interestingly, life to get to where I am. So that being said, it's just you'll find that what you think you're trying to provide for them doesn't exist. And Common Core was another thing that put that over the edge. You know, I've learned from my youngest child, he has dyslexia. I probably have that too. All the symptoms of what he has, I have. I manage through it somehow. But when I take exams, I count the questions and I worry more about finishing the exam than the questions, and that distracts your mind. Mm-hmm. And so he's in an environment where he can learn to deal with what he's got to do. In the school system, they say dyslexia may be as high as 17%. And they get put in the, you know, the
special
ed class. And really, the schools just need to teach dyslexia, because there's a method of doing that. And they should just not make a classroom like that, but actually learn how to teach these kids those things.
It's actually the largest learning difference out there. So you could think about how we adjust to someone that's left-handed. That's 11% of the country. Remember, they used to force you to use your right hand. Now they've adapted. Well, with dyslexia, they don't adjust to you at all. You have to adjust to it. It's really heartbreaking. And you haven't answered the question yet, but most dyslexics are highly gifted, and the largest population of highly gifted are in prison. So a lot of these kids get bottlenecked as trouble and more trouble, and so they become trouble. And I think there's a huge societal room for improvement with dyslexic and gifted, because they don't fit the norm, right?
And that's
an answer about prongs.
School system, Stephanie, that a lot of these dyslexic kids are diagnosed and they're not really helping, right? I mean, it's not so much charter schools or private schools. It's kind of the public school. They're not the cookie cutter student.
No. And
so therefore, they're off on their own.
And here's the thing. You're entitled to an appropriate education. So a 504 gets you accommodations like you can choose your seat, more time for testing, a multiplication table, that sort of thing. IEP is actually, we need corrective action, like they are going to go get speech therapy. they are going to get specific dyslexia therapy. Every child is entitled to this if they qualify. Do you know how hard it is to get those services?
What are the qualifications?
A testing, but guess what? If you're a lower income family and you go in and you say, I think my child, and there's books to support this, like Malcolm Gladwell, we talk about him all the time. He's researched this. I think my child has a problem. Can you test him? The school will brush him off. Oh, we'll look into it. It's not in writing. So if the adult hasn't put it in writing, they can ignore it. The second it's in writing, they have 30 days to respond. So historically, the less affluent are not good at confrontation or questioning authority. They accept it. And then what happens as a result is their children do not get the support that they need and they fall by the wayside. And it's very, very unacceptable. And if you actually look at the public school system, the lower income kids do about twice as well as the affluent kids during the school year, because that's where they're getting help. Where during the summer months, they stay flat and the affluent kids raise significantly. So the school system isn't completely failing the lower income, but we are not offering children what we say we're offering them. And if the school doesn't have to use that special income for those kids, they get to keep it. So where do you think they're putting it?
Stephanie, that change in the summertime between the more affluent that are on an upward curve and those who aren't so much that are staying at a certain level,
they're provided with books and they're encouraged to read.
And experiences. We're going to go to the museum today. We're going to go on a vacation. Do you see that bird? That's a pigeon. You know, where the lower income are working all these jobs. The kids are probably left at home to their own. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah, okay.
I think there might be some listening who might need to hear this. You said 504? Did you say that? Talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so I'll probably get this wrong. It's the legal code. It's a federal law. 504 is the number that gets them academic help. I can look up what the specific thing is afterwards. An IEP is Individual Education Plan, which is also federal. Every child is entitled to it if that's what they need.
Got it. Thank you. Thank you.
Nancy, to answer your question, the way around this, because I worried about the social thing too. Our boys did swimming, so they're with a bunch of other kids, same age and older and younger, and they socialize that way. They both did taekwondo. Drew, the older, 14. He's double black belt. The other one's single black belt. And they socialize through that club. They're also Boy Scouts, so they hang with the guys and they learn from the other guys that are older as Boy Scout method, and they socialize that way. And they learn very adult things, eye-to-eye contact, and they have to speak and learn different things. So they become very socialized that way. And the last is we found like-minded people that we formed a co-op with. So we really have not just a homeschool. It's like a little old house on the prairie.
It's like family.
Yeah. How many families would you say?
We have 8 families and they're very like-minded. And I would also say that he left out his church and being involved. So with everything, you are going to do whatever your children are going to do what you do. So if you isolate yourself, your children are going to be isolated. If you're really active, your children are going to be active. And you know, our oldest daughter, she's 29. Division 1 volleyball player. Athletics was probably the best thing that ever happened to her. We are big proponents of athletics because it teaches you life lessons. Mm-hmm. And especially for girls, don't ever just focus on being pretty. You need to be smart and you need to be athletic and a good friend and well-rounded, right? Don't ever rest on that one thing. And so my heart does go out for these kids or different people in different life. They didn't get graduation. They didn't get a prom or they didn't get, you know, their championship baseball game. There's a lot of losses for people. And that realness is different for every person. One might not care about prom. Another may have looked their whole life to prom, right? So it's hard. I think we need to be gracious to people that are hurting for the one thing that really matters to them.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to jump one thought again. This is so good what you're sharing. 15 or 16 years ago, I look back now, some of this may have changed, Stephanie, and you and Craig probably know more at this point, but the six basic ways that we teach children, you know, auditory, sensory, visual, hands-on, there's so many things, and every student learns differently. And when they get all clumped together with the core curriculum and all these things, they don't get a chance to be discovered as what works best. And they can't do it because there's not enough teachers and those that are leaving. And then all the other reasons, warm a seat, get the tax dollar. So as a Christian high school principal, we had a huge element of homeschoolers. We worked so close with them. And they said, well, we don't know about this. Now, I'm going to date myself because this was before all the club sports, which are so cool right now. But we had team sports. We were the Canyonville Christian Academy pilots with the big ships, you know, stuff like that. We played all over, or we played the public schools even. But those that wanted to homeschool, we set up a whole division when I was a principal, worked it all the way through the school. And if they would take a special arts, like sing in our choir, then they could sing in our choir and do all their homeschooling, get all the credit. We teamed with them. Their family became our families. And we didn't intrude really on it. They had the families, like you're saying, they were all homeschoolers, but they were part of our whole family also. Same thing at Faith Christian down south. But by working together on this, whatever those six different ways of learning we could develop. And lastly, quickly, in your home as parents, those students learn from you, like you're saying, Craig, day after day after day with the way that they're comfortable as they watch you. It's the difference between flying, you know, a Jenny in World War I and getting with Rob in an F-14 Tomcat. It's a big difference in what you could teach them. How's that for an illustration, Rob?
You're doing great, Dr. Joe. Keep it up. You're doing a fine job.
I'm running it. I'm running the reel.
Excuse me.
I also think one of
Excuse
the
me,
things.
Stephanie, you go ahead.
Oh, sorry. One of the other things that I think is sort of a blessing because of this is, you know, the original school system was set up, or what are we talking, like the 50s, 40s? It was like, go straight to factory or go get more of a career, like a different career specialized where you need an AA, right? Now they're all funneled like, oh, everybody needs to go to college. And like you're saying, Rob, somebody gets a bachelor's and whatever with a $200,000 loan and they're now a barista. So that's not a great path. But what I really think we need, you know, this, I have a lot of information on this. I need to be able to discern what's truth and what's not. My children will learn their ABCs. They will learn their 1, 2, 3s. I want to make them a good human. What is your character? What is your value? How do you know if this article is true? Is this journalism or is this opinion? There's so much information and we need to teach our children how to dissect it. How do you run a business? How do you manage your household? How do you do finances? All these things that are not taught at all in traditional school and will actually serve our children for life. So I think that's a nice thing is that with kids being home, they're going to see the things their parents are doing and maybe ask or participate more in that because they're present all the time.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of adults that can use that same advice, Stephanie. A lot.
I needed some of it, yes.
Yeah.
Well, the American Pediatric Association came out with.
It's absolutely true that kindness is learned in the home. And my mother always said, pretty is as pretty does. Mm-hmm. What did you do to help someone less blessed today? Mm-hmm. And then I also wanted to share, I am dyslexic. And they always wondered why I was a very good student, but had a very hard time with my SATs. Rob, just to SATs, the timer's on. You've got 4 hours, three hours. Yeah. And which number am I on? And with the pressure of the clock and the numbers and so I couldn't pass my SATs, but I had straight A's. So they'd go, what happened? We're going to let you take it again. Why? It won't help. Give me an oral test. And they let me have an oral test. Mm-hmm. So what I could share a whole nother story in a whole nother time about being dyslexic. And
so
a high 504, achiever in sports.
If you have a 504, if you have a 504 as a child, you can also transition it to college, and it would allow you to have oral testing of 50 of SAT. It will also allow you up to double time. You can have someone read it aloud to you. Yes, and so that's huge because that held you back, and that wasn't a fair representation of your knowledge.
It didn't hold me back except for my SAT sports. Academia, oral leadership, friendly, helping others all the time. But those SATs were a biatch. It was hard.
I was not a good tester. When I took a test, it was like a brain. Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. There's that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
math anxiety, anxiety. Yeah.
I used to take tests in the university with Paul, and he never sweated.
Oh, no.
Paul, yeah, that's sweating now.
I know, he's still not right.
Yeah. Look how laid back he is.
Yeah, until I woke up, you know, and then that was funny. I wanted to insert something really quickly. I don't know why this necessarily shifted, but I'm a product of the public school as well. I grew up in small town Southern Illinois, and it was yes sir, yes ma'am, a lot of respect, rows, columns. That's just how it worked. I transferred my junior year of high school into Santa Barbara High School in 1965, and the world was upside down. I remember my psychology teacher, almost the first day, he asked me my name, and I gave him my name, and then he asked me another question. I said, yes, sir, and he let me have it. He just unloaded. Why are you calling me sir? Do not, you know, da 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 da. And I tried to explain it's a term of respect. You know, mm-hmm. You're the teacher, I'm the student. And I realized at that point my world had just made a major shift. And it was a very tough transition to make that turn. And I'm thinking there's so many kids out there that come from families are solid. They do love each other. They care for one another. They spend time. They're thrown into this huge pond, and all bets are off. And the one that pays for it is the kid who's trying to show respect, do what's told, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really hard. It's really, really hard. I have a lot of compassion.
That is hard. Yeah, that is hard. I'm going to have to jump in. I'm getting the sign. Boy, what an exciting night it's been. And Stephanie and Craig, thanks for sharing, all of you. I just want you to know real quick, tell your friends and neighbors, hit that button if you can. In our minutes time here, I got like a minute to go. This staff's been working so hard. These are some of the best. I wish you could meet this group of people. Everybody listening in right now or watching us, because there's no better people anywhere. We want you to know everybody's been working on this. On August the 3rd, we're going to have James Robbins, the classic author of The Erasing of America. You look him up. He's on our website. Go to our website with BBS Radio, Raising Expectations. We're going to have Cal Thomas, the conservative commentator, Fox News, speaker and author. We've got Doug Weed. You see him on Fox News with his book on the President and All the Children. Lloyd Marcus, the unhyphenated American. Some of these guys, a couple of them Rob's known. We're going to have a good time with them when they get here. We have grown to love each other. We want to grow to love you. So go to our website. Mark, you'll see it right there. Give us your name. Call back to us. Let us know what you're up to. And there's a spot there that you can dial in. Hey, dial in also tonight on there and write in. Let Stephanie and let Craig know that you appreciate all they shared. And may our lives, like she said every morning, be given to the Lord. Have a word of prayer. Look at your day and then be ready to go out and make a difference for good. As Zig Ziglar used to say, do something good for someone else and watch what it'll do for you. Oh, don't forget that donation button either. Boy, I hate throwing that in. You can tell I'm a pastor. But anyway, that's going to be a good one. Anybody else? Real quick, you got a couple seconds. We're going to spotlight the video. It's already ready to go, and we're going to be out here till next week. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556, or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.